Okay, so I'm going to be talking about hospital and emergency department use among people with cognitive impairment in three settings. One, sort of general community, nursing homes, and what we call in the United States residential care facilities, which includes assisted living facilities, but is much broader than that. So I first want to acknowledge my co-authors and the funding source, which is U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the standard disclaimer that what I'm saying today are my opinions and not the view of the government. So people with Alzheimer's disease, severe cognitive impairment, dementia, have high healthcare costs, and hospitalizations and emergency department use are particularly a policy concern for this population because they're associated with various adverse outcomes such as death, decreased quality of life, increased confusion. So it's a matter of considerable concern for policymakers, and it's costly as well. So as I've already mentioned, I'm going to be presenting two studies that look at hospitalization and emergency department use in various settings. And for the community population and the nursing home population, we're also going to be looking at potentially avoidable hospitalizations. So in the first study, we're using the Health and Retirement Study 2000-2008, merged with Medicare claims data over that same time period. Medicare is our social insurance program that provides health insurance for older people and some younger people with disabilities. Because we need to find out whether or not people have a hospitalization or an emergency department use, we have to use the fee-for-service population rather than people who are enrolled in managed care organizations because they don't report actual utilization. And for this first study, we'll be looking at people who live in the community and people who are in nursing homes. And the outcomes are hospitalizations overall and potentially avoidable. There are a number of diagnoses that are widely used in the United States to determine potentially avoidable hospitalizations. We've modified that a little bit to focus on an older population, a population with disabilities. And in turn, one of the things that is difficult to do throughout studies of dementia is defining who has dementia, who has severe cognitive impairment. What we've done is we're using a hybrid measure that combines Medicare claims where there's a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease or related conditions combined with a validated health and retirement study measure of cognitive impairment from both the self and the proxy. But so we're combining survey data with Medicare claims. And so we're trying to focus on severe cognitive impairment that would be consistent with dementia. So with that definition, about 12% of the population age 65 and older in the community had cognitive impairment. Almost two-thirds of people in nursing homes. Yesterday, Martin Knapp's presentation, he identified maybe 17% of people in care homes who have cognitive impairment. So overall, we're looking at about 16%. So here are the main results for the first study. Having cognitive impairment has a very big, statistically significant increase in your odds of having any hospitalization, and also significantly increases your chance of having a potentially avoidable hospitalization compared to people who don't have cognitive impairment, and also very substantially increases your odds of having any emergency department use. Interestingly, in the nursing home population, basically none of those outcomes are statistically significant. And I didn't talk about it, but this is a result of an equation that includes a bunch of control variables like age and gender and those medical conditions. So this is adjusted percentages. So as you can see, there's a pretty big difference for any hospitalization. It's statistically significant, any potentially avoidable hospitalization, and emergency department use. These are the non-significant differences, and as you can see, there isn't much difference. So for the limitation for this first study is that we had to limit this to the Medicare fee-for-service beneficiaries to the extent that people voluntarily enroll in managed care organizations are different. We don't know about them. We're struggling, as does everyone else, to define people with severe cognitive impairment. So the second study looks at people in residential care facilities, and it uses a different data set. Our original hope was that we could use the health and retirement study to identify people who were in these residential care facilities and then compare it with this data set, but the measures within the health and retirement study basically didn't let us use that. So for this study, we're using the 2010 National Survey of Residential Care Facilities, which we designed and did data collection for the National Center for Health Statistics in the United States. And in order to get into the survey, you had to have four or more beds, you had to provide 24-hour supervision, you had to provide help with either personal care or health-related tasks, such as medication management, and you had to provide two meals a day. Facilities that exclusively serve people with learning disabilities or severe mental illness were excluded. So these facilities are basically oriented towards the older population. And since we're looking at Alzheimer's disease, in cognitive impairment, we limited it to the elderly population. So our outcomes are any hospital stay over the last 12 months and any emergency department use over the last 12 months. For this study, the definition of severe cognitive impairment was having a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease or dementia, or having three of seven memory impairments, confusion, or problems with orientation. Since we were surveying both facilities and residents, we were able to identify people who were in special care units that focused on Alzheimer's disease, or there were a number of facilities that only served people with Alzheimer's disease. And so for this, we'll look at equations that don't include this variable and equations that do. And so here are the results. And so in this first statistical model, again, after controlling for all the usual suspects, having cognitive impairment, severe cognitive impairment was very marginally statistically significant at the 0.10 level. That's not usually good enough for a journal, but it was kind of marginally marginally inclusive. I did that. In the second model, where we did include the special care units and facilities, then we lost the statistical significance for cognitive impairment, but the living in a special care unit or a facility that only served people with Alzheimer's disease turned out to be statistically significant. So we get pretty much the same result for emergency department use, barely significant in a positive way for severe cognitive impairment that disappears when we enter the special care unit or facility that serves people with Alzheimer's disease, but in both cases, it's a positive relationship. So limitations for this study is that the data is basically reported by the staff. We don't have claims data. We're not able to do potentially avoidable hospitalizations. The categorization of severe cognitive impairment is not definitive, and we don't have data on the number of hospitalizations or expenditures. So for just to summarize, 12% of the community dwelling fee-for-service beneficiaries age 65 and older had cognitive impairment. 64% of those in nursing homes and a slight majority of people in residential care facilities. Among the community dwelling individuals with Alzheimer's disease or cognitive impairment, those were more likely to have hospitalizations and emergency department use, both overall and potentially avoidable, and the coefficients were quite large. Among nursing home residents, there was no significant difference by cognitive status in either hospitalizations or in emergency department use. Among people living in residential care facilities, residents with cognitive impairment were marginally more likely to have any hospitalization or emergency department use. But that disappeared when we added special care units to the equation. But the people, when we added it to the equation, the people living in special care units were more likely to have a hospitalization or emergency department use. So to conclude, hospitalizations and emergency department use are of importance because it leads to adverse outcomes for people who have cognitive impairment. I think the very high rates of hospitalization and emergency department use for people with cognitive impairment really kind of point to the issue that the primary care system in the United States is really not set up to deal with people who have dementia. So as soon as something starts to go wrong, people are shipped out to the emergency department and to hospitals. We've got a significant portion of people who are in both of those settings that are potentially avoidable in terms of their hospitalizations. The U.S. government is doing a lot to try to reduce potentially avoidable hospitalizations, but none of them are focusing on people with dementia, even though they form a substantial portion of the population that have these problems. And finally, it's not clear how it is that the special care units in residential care facilities increase the hospitalizations and emergency department visits. That's the opposite that we would have expected. It may be that they have a very special vision of the kinds of people who are living there, and as soon as you kind of step outside of that boundary and develop medical problems or something, they want you out of there, and so they send you off to the hospital or an emergency room. Thank you. Questions? We may have looked at that. I don't recall. We did enter into the equation whether people die, but I don't remember what the results were for them. But in general, I would expect that the nursing home population would have a higher mortality rate than the community-based population. We did control for a number of medical conditions and accounts of chronic conditions as well. Other questions?
Based on the conclusion, is there any recommendation of changing and starting maybe some special unit, some special Alzheimer unit in the retirement home? Normally in France, they have some special unit in the retirement home that specializes in Alzheimer's, so that's not.
Well, so I think there is a large literature in the United States about special care units in nursing homes. And those, Charlene can correct me, but I think the vast bulk of that literature shows that it doesn't make any difference in terms of outcomes, although they typically cost substantially more. There are also, you know, about 14% of people in residential care facilities are in either in dementia care units or in facilities that only accept people with Alzheimer's disease. And we have another study that looks at charges, but the cost of being in those facilities is substantially more than being not being in those facilities, and three quarters of people with dementia in residential care facilities are not there. But there's less literature on the effectiveness of that, but the fact that it increases hospitalizations makes me a little nervous in terms of the desirability of those kinds of facilities. I didn't talk about it, but one of the things that was striking about the residential care facility analysis was how few facility level variables made any difference. Staffing levels didn't make a difference. Ownership didn't make a difference. The only thing that really made a difference were the resident characteristics, like having certain chronic illnesses that would put you at risk of needing hospitalization. Okay.
So, what about, maybe that was a policy level variable. Some of the states have legislation, aging in place legislation, that means that some assisted living facilities are keeping people with more acute conditions later. So.
We did control for states,
yeah.
But the National Center for Health Statistics doesn't really let you look at which state you control for. So we do have, I think that the time and money has kind of run out for that, but one of the other projects at RTI is to gather, to develop a compendium of residential care facility regulations.
Yeah.
And so it would be possible to kind of add that in later on. Helen?
Sorry, I'm being passive and it's time to my transition from one place to the other. We were recently asked in the UK about something earlier to look at what would be the impact of bad care in terms of additional. Avoidable hospitalizations and also longer stays in hospital are a clear way, but we couldn't cost that in the UK. We didn't have the right information. And I don't know if that's something you'd be able to score. Apologies if you already mentioned.
Well, in the paper I sent Raphael, we do have, so we've got a percentage of people in the community and in nursing homes with potentially avoidable hospitalizations. So, I mean, you could, if you're desperate, you could take the U.S. numbers and apply them to the U.K.
It's better than
the community, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it looks like maybe a third to a quarter of the hospitalizations for the cognitively impaired population.
So it looks like it's pretty dangerous to move into residential care because this one compared to the next one where you look at the adjusted percent of people who live in residential care who go to hospital, all of their rates are higher, whether they've got cognitive impairment or not. And so what are there the policy implications to help people stay in the community?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the message I get from what you're saying.
Well, yeah. I don't think that's quite what I said. I think... So if you don't want there to be a difference in your hospitalization rates, you should either go into a nursing home or a residential care facility, because they're basically the same whether you're cognitively impaired or not. The danger is going into a dementia care unit where you have a statistically significant chance of a higher utilization rate. But purely on that measure, if you're just demented and in the facility, then you're probably okay. But the place where you have the real risk of a big difference is is in the community in the U.S. because that's where there's a huge difference, and that's still where the bulk of the demented population is.
I thought the other comparison there, though, was that your actual percentage risk of being admitted to hospital was higher in the next one.
Yes. Well, that's true. I mean,
so whether you've got dementia or not, if you're in one of these places,
right,
you're more likely to be hospitalized, and even more likely to have avoidable hospitalization, and that's terrible.
Well, that's true.
But you're just saying it's not statistically.
I mean,
no,
the difference is not.
But it's not comparing to the community.
Right. So, we stratified by location because we thought there would be certain kinds of things that we couldn't control for. But we are able to control for ADLs and IADLs and those kinds of things. And we did put in the health retirement study, there are a large number of medical conditions that you can control for. And we did put in a lot of them. Any other questions?
It's not about this, but is it more dangerous to live with dementia, the same dementia people, if you have dementia, from other studies?
Is it more dangerous to
Live with other dementia patients? I mean, in those special.
That's a possibility.
Because in Australia, I just noticed they encourage kids with autism to go to normal schools,
mm-hmm.
saying that it's better for the kid with autism. I just wonder with dementia, maybe it's easier to live with normal people rather than the same group.
Well, maybe easier for the person with dementia, it's maybe harder for the person with that. Without the dementia.
Yeah, we have to.
That's
sorry. I have just contributed to the discussion. I think this is uncomparable to autism includes behavioral problems, where dementia does not primary, and therefore it is not a problem, especially for people with autonomous to live together. If you provide them with support care, maybe a part like Huntington's or other dementia, frontotemporal lobe disease, rare forms of dementia might be a problem, but
okay, so we'll go on to our third presentation.